Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to Brokenomics. Now, in this episode, I have hastily put together something on the question of tariffs. Tariffs popped up last night and I thought, let's move things around a bit on the Brokenomics schedule and get an explainer on tariffs up nice and quick. I want to try and go through the full picture. I did have a bit of a stab at this on the podcast. There's really only so much you can get through in a 20-minute segment, especially if Harry's on. So I thought it needed a full Brokenomics as well to kind of really dive into the question at hand. So I'm going to try and cover all the angles here, the reaction, why it happened, how they work, the executive order, all that kind of thing. And we should come away from this one with a decent understanding of why this is happening, what is happening, how it's happening, and what I expect the reaction function to be following on from this. So the first thing is, let's put this in context. And I did allude to this in the segment that I did earlier, where I basically said, okay, look, you've got to consider the dollar system as a whole. And, okay, so basically the quick version there is that after the Second World War, America ended up with all the gold because it was both a safe haven and a functional economy. And it supplied Europe with much of the rest of the world what it needed. And they're paid in gold. So you get to the end of the Second World War and the US has all the gold. And somebody, probably an American, thought, wouldn't it be good if we got to hang on to all of this? So you then have a whole series of agreements that I've explained at length in previous Brokenomics. The dollar system is a great one with the guest that I had on for that. So go into that if you want to get all the details. But, you know, that all sort of worked perfectly fine until US politicians could not stop spending more than they could justify, even with their dominant economic position, even as being the world's reserve currency. So in 1971, and again, I've covered this at length in previous Brokenomics, the US basically went off the gold standard to fiat-based money. They were still the world's reserve currency, what everybody uses for trade internationally in order to keep things simple. But now there was no limit to the amount of dollars that could be produced. The only limit was the restraint of politicians, which obviously is not much of a restraint limit at all. And what you ended up with was a situation where the dollar supply kept on going up. Now, weirdly, you know, you end up in a situation where the US can export basically just dollars, so pieces of paper that it just makes out of thin air, and, well, not the pieces of paper, but the dollars themselves, you can make those out of thin air, and you send them abroad, and then people send you real stuff in exchange. Now, that sounds fantastic, but it does mean that you end up exporting your entire manufacturing base as a result of it. Because, of course, why would you make anything at home if you can just magic money and then somebody else makes it for you and sends it to you? As you can imagine, that is quite an attractive trick And it's very difficult not to take advantage of that trick, but it's a bit, well, it hollows you out. It's great if you're the money class. It's great if you're the ruling class. Very much not great if you're not part of those two groups, but you are in America, because now all the elites are getting very, very rich and you can't get a job because your job has been exported abroad. So a real issue. So, okay, let's try and take us through the picture logically. Dollar has US reserve status, massive demand for dollars around the world. To meet that demand of massive dollars, the US must send dollars abroad. It does that by running a trade deficit. America imports more than it exports, and it pays in dollars, which, as we've said, you know, they can just magic up. And in exchange, the world sends them real things, okay? Okay, so sweet deal, as we've established. You know, you ship green paper abroad. In return, you get computers, flat screens, cars, clothes, and agricultural goods, all of it, you know, all of that stuff. And you could ask whether that's exploitation or privilege. I suppose it's both. But the catch is that the US gets to live beyond its means and it doesn't feel the pain of doing so. Well, it does eventually because it runs a huge deficit. It keeps on creating debt and that debt has a cost that needs to be serviced. And so eventually it does come back to bite you rather hard. When does it come back to bite you? Oh, about 20 years ago. You really started to feel the pain of it. You're really feeling it really acutely now with a deficit of $2 trillion a year and an interest expense. Just servicing US debt at this point is $1 trillion a year. And it is going to grow pretty consistently. So the problem is, with this dollar system, is that it allows really bad domestic policy to go unpunished. Any other country who ran domestic policy as badly as the US would have already had an economic collapse, a revolution, you know, military coup, something like that. But the US just carries on living beyond its means, importing more and more, making astonishingly bad domestic decisions. I mean, Joe Biden was an absolute case point example of this, and getting away with it. Until you get to the point where the debt buildup is so massive that it overwhelms the system. And because you haven't taken the corrective measures previously, that any other country who didn't have this dollar system would have been forced to take, the pain when it comes is quite potentially utterly catastrophic. And then you get into the situation of the Brokenomics I did. Oh, what was that book? I did it with Proper Horror Show. The Mandibles. Yeah, the Brokenomics on the Mandibles. It was a fictional story. But it spoke to me because it was an example of what America would look like on the other side of an economic collapse, having built up the vast imbalances that it is able to build up under this system. Okay, so what does Trump want to do? He wants to keep the privilege of the dollar-based system. He doesn't want to lose that. And he doesn't want to suffer the downside of, you know, uncompetitive export sector. So he kind of wants to use this to get the best of both worlds, which is still going to be painful. So by taxing imports, Trump does make the dollar that bit less attractive. It's still going to be attractive. It's still going to be used across the world. But it is going to become less dominant. So he's indirectly weakening it without messing with its reserve status, which is really US's superpower. I mean, people think they're a superpower because they've got lots of aircraft carriers and they can make lots of things go boom all over the world. Really, it's the dollar. That's their key superpower. So he's hoping to boost US exports, bring some production back. It is a bit of a blunt instrument, but then it's not obvious to me that there was a better option. You know, you'd like to think there's some highfalutin, really complex, subtle strategy that could be weaved in. You got to remember, he's working on a political timescale. You know, he's only got 4 years. He's only got, less than 2 years now until the midterms. He has to act fast unless he wants to completely torpedo J.D. Vance's or whoever's prospects of winning in 4 years. So he needs to act fast. And actually, even if he did take the time to come up with some absurdly complex, masterfully subtle alternative to this, it's not necessarily obvious to me that it would be any better than this. Okay, so he's going with this. So he's externalizing the costs instead of reforming domestic policy. And it shifts the pressure onto basically US allies and trade partners. So he's not really doing monetary reform. He's kind of doing a bit more, he's a little bit more coercive than that and a bit of a blunt tactic. Short-term reaction, we're coming to some of this. In fact, let's talk about it now. Short-term reaction is the S&P drops, you know, big stock dropped, everyone's portfolio dropped. You know, my portfolio has declined quite a lot, back to the levels that it was at in February. So we're in the early days of April, and my portfolio is now back to where it was in February of this year. You know, I think I'll live, but people are going. You can tell the people who've got a stock portfolio online on social media, because they are going absolutely berserk at the moment because their portfolio has dropped. It's like, oh, suck it up. Come on, be a big boy. I mean, my portfolio is back to where it was in February, but the S&P 500, I believe, is back to where it was about 2 years ago. And people are saying, oh, it's the end of the world. It's back to where it was 2 years ago? Seriously? That's your definition of what you need to completely freak out about? Some stocks, I think we have to talk about Nike later, because we talk about Nike later. But, you know, some stocks have been, you know, hit quite bad on this. If that is you, if you are one of the Brokenomic listeners who actually has a portfolio, don't panic. Don't freak out. You know, you see all these news headlines about $2 trillion was wiped off the stock market. Makes it sound all very permanent and stuff. You know, it's not. People are panicking. People need cash liquidity, or they're lowering their risk profile. And the marginal share getting traded is getting pushed low. And if you then re-denominate the entire stock market by the handful of marginal shares that got traded in a panic, then that notionally revalues the entire stock market down by $2 trillion. But I mean, could you really convince all of the shareholders to sell their shares at this new low valuation? So no, $2 trillion is such a news headline-y way of saying it, but it doesn't really. $2 trillion has not really been wiped from the US market. It's just marginal shares have been traded and people are panicking and all that kind of stuff. Okay, back to the explainer. It's an attempt to address an aspect of the core problem. But this by itself is not going to tackle the whole problem, right? Because you can't reshore industry with taxes alone. It is going to take more than that. Because actually the bigger problem is probably productivity. And productivity is getting crushed by red tape, you know, all the regulation that there is. A lot of that really needs to go. Deficit spending, union power, regulatory capture. That's a big thing under Biden as well, wasn't it? It wasn't just under Biden, but it ramped up significantly under Biden. All of that needs reworking. You've got a whole generation of young white men who are targeted, trying to push them out of the workforce or basically just push them out of society altogether. All of that needs to change. There's a whole bunch of other issues down the line from this. I did a Brokenomics on The Wire not so long ago, and one of the things I talked about there was US ports. And it was striking. I mean, I know that was a fictional representation, but I mean, it highlighted a number of issues. The resistance to automation, better workflow processes. It's the kind of shit that unions do and people resistant to change do. US ports need to take on a lot more automation. They need to become a lot more efficient. These tariffs are not going to handle, you know, any of that. I mean, to give an example, you need the tech upgrades. You need to see the productivity rise. So there's a whole bunch of things down the line. I mean, automation in factories as well. And I'll come to this later, because I included a social media post from somebody saying that they'd worked in a Chinese factory. We'll come to that later. US workers are never going to work in the way that Chinese workers are prepared to work. They're not going to work 13-hour shifts with no air conditioning, sleeping in a dorm on the top level of the factory, eating a bowl of rice a day. You know, the US is never going to match Asia when it comes to labor cost, but they can match them through superior education and American or Anglo propensity for innovation and, well, working with robots, basically, that's what I'm getting at. That, you know, they are going to be able to work significantly more efficiently, even if they are not going to be able to work as cheaply with bad conditions. That's not what the US should be going for. Okay, so that basically sort of hopefully gives a big picture which all of this fits into. Created by Dollar Reserve System, which has allowed lots of bad habits to establish, allowed America to live beyond its means, seems great. You can understand why you're fully in favor of this system if you are a US elite and you've got a big stock portfolio, if you're a politician, you know, if you're doing well from this system. What Trump has just done, it hits you like a hammer blow. The globalists are up in arms. Lots of people with, you know, what do they call them, 401ks, are up in arms. There's loads and loads of people in America who are not part of the elite or don't even have a 401k. They don't have a portfolio. They probably don't even have a home of their own or a job. And those are the people that are actually really looking to benefit from this system. Right, so let's take a look at the tariffs themselves before we get deeper into the explainer. So hopefully my editor can show on screen. These are the tariffs. So let's just have a quick look at this list. So China, Trump is framing this as if China is imposing a 67% tariff, and then he's very generously halved it to 34%. Not actually what's happening. You know, Vietnam is not imposing 90% tariffs on US goods. All he's basically done is taken the exports from, say, Vietnam. He's taken the exports from the US to Vietnam, and then he's divided one number by the other and done it as a percentage. So the trade imbalance between US and Vietnam is 90%. So 90% more goes from Vietnam to the US than the other way around. That's how he's come up with these numbers. But he hasn't framed it like that. He's framed it as if these are reciprocal tariffs, which is inaccurate. Why has he done that? I suppose it's easier to justify. It's an easier pitch. It's easier to get people on board because most people are... And I had this on my segment yesterday. I put the segment up and I explained, no, actually, these are not reciprocal tariffs. That's not how it worked. So many people were saying, oh, well, if we get in charge of this, then it's generous to be charging half of it. No, that's not what's happening. And I was actually very supportive. I am supportive of this policy, very supportive. One of the relatively few people who are supportive of this policy. And I still had some knuckle draggers coming in and saying that I was bashing Trump for this. No, I'm not. I'm just, let's be real. He's not doing reciprocal tariffs. He's trying to address a trade imbalance. And I support him for that. And I think it's right. It's fine, but it is what it is. It's a very blunt method, which, like I say, I'm not sure there's a better method available, and it's not reciprocal. But he's framing it in that way. Okay, so these are the countries that are, you know, on his list. So, you know, you can see there China are going to get tariffs of 34%. I mean, actually, 34% does sound about right for the effective tariffs that China is imposing on the US effectively. So actually, the numbers that he actually comes out with, I'm kind of fine with. European Union 20%, Vietnam 46%, because Vietnam produces a shitload of apparel, textiles, you know, Nike, you know your trainers and polo shirts and all the rest of it. A lot of them are produced in Vietnam, and Vietnam has a limited demand for American goods. Yeah, anyway, Taiwan 32%, Japan 24%, India 26%. These tariffs are much larger than people were expecting. People were expecting at the top end all the all the analysts were thinking top end maybe 20 to 25%, probably lower. And so a lot of people have been caught out, a lot of scrambling, you know, thus the stock price move, because people are repositioning their portfolio, getting out of companies like Nike, which are hit well beyond what they're expecting it to happen. Switzerland, 31%. Switzerland doesn't, I don't believe, I had a quick dig into this, I don't believe Switzerland is imposing any great tariffs on the US. I mean, they're imposing some, but not that high. So Indonesia, 32%, Malaysia, 24%. Let's go to, United Kingdom, 10%. Yeah, because we don't have a trading, balance with the US, because our economy is also too orientated towards services, in our case, financial services and media. Actually, some, come to think of it, some of us do financial services and media combined, but you know, that's a subset. But you know, you get the point. The UK is doing a lot of ethereal type stuff, and therefore we don't produce a lot of goods, and therefore we don't have a goods trade imbalance with the US. So you know, we come out of this anyway. We go into these tariffs in a bit more detail later, but just wanted to give you a look at it. Next thing. Let's take a look at the executive order itself. I won't read through the executive order itself because it is very long and you would get bored and so would I. So instead, let's try and pick out the key elements within it. So it's framed as a national emergency, and it's framed that way because there is a $1.2 trillion US trade goods deficit. And that is up 40% in only 5 years. And it's framed in the executive order, and I agree with this, that that is a threat to national security and the economy. So thus an emergency, thus an executive order. And the stat that was quite striking for me is US manufacturing has dropped to 17.4% of global output, down from 28.4% in 2021. So down from, you know, call that, let's round to the nearest integer, from 28% down to 17%, you know, in the space of about 20 years. You know, that is a significant loss. I think they go on to point out that 5 million jobs have been lost in manufacturing since 1997. And that engenders weakness throughout the US economy. Manufacturing drives 55% of patents, they say. It drives 75% of research and development. And they particularly highlight areas that they're concerned of, such as defense and pharmaceuticals. Fair enough. They highlight the supply chain risks. So they highlight the over-reliance on foreign goods in, you know, sectors like in sectors like defense and pharmaceuticals, citing COVID-19 as an example of where that was really brought to the fore. And other supply chain issues they highlight is, say, for example, the Houthi attacks, meaning that certain goods really... I mean, the Houthi attacks didn't have a huge impact on the US. I mean, on the northeast coast, it would have done, but... the Houthi thing was a much bigger problem for Europe, less so Northern Europe. For the Mediterranean, it was devastating. But nevertheless, it's a good example of a supply chain disruption along with COVID. They highlight defence and agriculture. So they point out that, you know, US stockpiles of military things is low. Agricultural inputs are low. Slight tangent, but okay, I will go on a tangent now. One of the weird thought experiments that I sometimes run through my head when I've got nothing better to do, like I'm driving to bloody Swindon or something, is to think about, you know, what would happen if you took a country, a modern country, and you just sent it back in time to like the Roman Empire or something. And you tend to think this one through and basically any modern country, because they're so high up the tech tree, would end up conquering the world eventually, even like bloody Malta or, you know, something. Belgium, you know, probably would eventually, because, you know, today we have guns and we know how things work and stuff like that. medicines. As long as the Romans or the Gauls didn't completely rush you on day one and overwhelm you, you probably end up taking over the world. But then there's the whole question about how easy would it be? And, make this comparison. If Britain of the 1960s was sent back in time to the days of the Roman Empire, they would just clean sweep the world within a few decades. No problems, because they were able to produce everything that they needed to produce domestically. They couldn't quite feed their population because we were reliant on US agricultural support for a good few years after the war. But we could do a hell of a lot better than we can today. If you were to send modern Britain back and put it in that situation, force it to be self-reliant until it could, conquer enough land and modernize it and bring in the farm equipment and all the rest of it. If you were to do it to modern Britain, yes, it would probably still take over the world eventually, but it might take 100 years because the first 30 to 40 years would just be absolute collapse, absolute total collapse. We cannot remotely feed ourselves anymore. We don't have remotely enough energy. We've got rid of vast amounts of our manufacturing. It would be absolutely devastating. Cities would tear themselves apart and then promptly starve. It's an interesting thought experiment, whatever that, that appeals to me sometimes. But then you start applying it to other countries. Which countries would do well in that sort of scenario?
If you would like to see the full version of this premium video, please head over to lotuseaters.com and subscribe to gain full access to all of our premium content.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date, it notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.